KHUM is freeform independent radio from Humboldt County, California. Learn more at khum.com.
Joining me on the telephone today is Emily Benvey. She is the Environmental Programs Manager for the City of Arcata. Are you there, Emily?
Hi, Amy. I'm here. How's it going?
It is going very, very well. So Delia emailed me and you together, and I guess we're talking about the Bay Trail, which I'm super excited about.
Yeah, that is my understanding. So the Humboldt Bay Trail currently is a collaborative effort between the City of Eureka, County of Humboldt, and City of Arcata. And I am here to talk specifically about the City of Arcata's portion, which is currently under construction.
And we're really excited. Every time I drive by the work that's being done along the 101, I get excited.
Yeah, me too. They're moving right along. I'm out there a few times a week, and every time I get there, it's amazing how much progress they've done. So it's a really, really exciting project, and we're all happy to see it come to fruition.
So describe to us, for people who haven't been listening to it on Happy Trails, what is this portion of the Bay Trail, and how does it fit in with the larger vision?
Sure. So the very largest vision is the California Coastal Trail. That is a 1,200-mile-long trail through the entire coast of California. To date, it is about halfway completed. And so the Humboldt Bay Trail is a link to that larger California Coastal Trail. And the Humboldt Bay Trail in general is approximately 13 miles long, starting in northern Arcata and ending in southern Eureka. And the portion we're working on currently starts from Samoa Boulevard and goes roughly to Breakout, or just north of Breakout. And that's about a 3-mile-long segment that we're calling Humboldt Bay Trail North.
Now, the North Coast Railroad Authority has adopted a rail with trail model. Is that correct?
Correct.
What does that mean in terms of trail construction?
Sure. So what that means is, rather than building the trail on the railroad tracks or decommissioning the railroad tracks and turning it into a trail, we are building the trail adjacent to the railroad tracks. And what that essentially does is, should the railroad ever decide to return, they still have their tracks in place. You know, they have their fill prism in place, and the trail can function complementary to the rail service.
So I understand it that that rail prism itself, the if you think of it as a big berm that the rails ride on top of, has mm-hmm. degraded a lot over time. And you also have mm-hmm. several sloughs and other things that have to be crossed with bridges, yes?
Mm-hmm. You're correct.
So those would be the bigger, more expensive challenges, I would assume?
Yeah. Yep. You've got it. From both an environmental standpoint, a permitting standpoint, and a construction standpoint, those have been the biggest challenges. This portion of the trail has 5 bridge crossings.
5? That's huge. Very small amount of space.
Yeah, yep, for sure. There's one that is a drainage area that goes from south of Samoa Boulevard to the Arcata Marsh Wildlife Sanctuary, and then the other 4 are crossing active sloughs. And Gannon Slough, if you're familiar with that one, is the longest, and that is almost a 200-foot bridge span.
Wow, that's really big. I mean, you don't necessarily see it from the safety corridor going 50 miles per hour, but wow,
right.
200 feet is long.
Yeah, and the active slough channel is not that long, but from abutment to abutment, the length of the bridge is it's pretty long. And so,
well, we know how dynamic the bay is. We know that it flushes completely twice a day, pretty much, and mm-hmm. we have a pretty dramatic tidal shift from high tide to low tide, and there are times of the year where that gets even bigger. And then when you have, you know, active runoff, if it's rainy, those slough channels have to accommodate a lot of water a lot of times of the day.
Yes, absolutely. And thank goodness for our our engineers on the project. You know, they did a great job in designing something that, you know, is not only feasible to construct, but they also did it in a way to minimize environmental impacts. So I think, you know, really it's an art form striking that balance between protecting the environment and creating something that can, you know, that doesn't obstruct flows and that is structurally sound.
Now, if I'm remembering correctly from long ago when I was in graduate school studying these things, those sloughs, those brackish sloughs, that ecotonal transition from bay to freshwater, it's a really rich and important environment for lots of critters.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
So I'm really glad to hear that the city of Arcata has taken pains to make sure that it's environmentally sound.
Yeah, and you know, it's not only the long-term impacts of how the bridge is designed, but also in the short term, when we're on site monitoring for construction, we have a lot of what are called best management practices to ensure that, you know, concrete runoff doesn't go into the water, ensure that we're not resulting in any sedimentation of the water. So there's a lot of practices that we employ to really minimize our impact, you know, restricting work to certain tidal cycles. Altogether, I want to say there's 109 discrete requirements that we fulfill in the realm of environmental protection.
So, and is that the job of your office to make sure that everybody's doing things correctly?
That's part of it, absolutely. So my particular role was helping to secure the environmental permits and now monitor for compliance in the field. We also have our resident engineer who's on site. We have a biologist who's there. We have a qualified stormwater practitioner. So it's really, it's a team effort as far as folks involved in making sure that things are done the way that they're supposed to be done.
And so when you hear about the cost of these projects, and I know this is not inexpensive, part of the reason why it is expensive is not just the concrete and steel and the bulldozers, but all of these experts doing their best to make sure everything is done correctly, yes?
Absolutely. And also, you know, the means in which things are constructed, you know, in order, so there's the hard costs of the concrete and the steel, and then the individuals monitoring the project, making sure things are done the way they should be done. And then it's also up to the contractor to come up with a way to actually do the work the way that they're supposed to do. And sometimes that can increase costs. For example, you know, traditionally construction equipment uses hydraulic fluids, and because we're working on the bay, we are using vegetable oil for our hydraulic fluids, which is much more expensive. So there's a lot of hidden costs.
But what a cool option to make sure that if something were to go wrong, it would only be vegetable oil going
absolutely
into the bay.
Yep, absolutely. So, yeah. It's amazing. You know, this is a really big project, and it's amazing how much you learn about all the intricacies of the construction process and how it all fits together with engineering and permitting and design and everything. It's really, really exciting.
Plus, when it's complete, when is the projected end date of this portion of the trail of construction?
Yeah, this portion of the trail is projected to be completed this October.
Wow. Which means that we will have this great stretch of Humboldt Bay with a trail right along the bay where people can go on their bikes and on foot and really see what's happening on the water and in the tidal flats.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're really, really looking forward to opening up a portion of the bay that right now people can't really get to. So it'll be really great for everyone. And, you know, eventually it'll be a great way for bicycle commuters to get from Arcata to Eureka.
You know, there are a couple of days a week when I commute between Eureka and Arcata along the safety corridor when I'm teaching at HSU. And I'm always, you know, heart in mouth when I see cyclists. It's definitely safer than it used to be, but I see people using the safety corridor on bikes every day that I'm on there, and that's not uncommon. When I was driving my kids to school in Arcata, I'd see them every day, every morning, every afternoon. So I'm really excited that there's going to be a class one option that will get them away from the cars.
Absolutely, yeah, the few and the brave.
Well, I imagine
I admire that, those individuals.
Yeah, those numbers are going to increase, I'm sure, dramatically once it becomes a safer option.
Definitely. You know, I know myself, I don't feel safe biking on the safety corridor myself right now, but if there's a, you know, a separated paved class one trail, absolutely. It would be definitely a possibility.
I know our family's kind of daydreaming of the day when we can go park at the Hickshari trailhead and ride our bikes up to the Arcata Farmers Market and back.
Absolutely. And eventually, you know, I think that it connects to the Hammond Trail, or one day will. So one day you'll get to go from southern Eureka all the way up to Trinidad.
That's yeah. And I just talked to the Trinidad Land Trust folks, or Coastal Land Trust folks, last week, and they talked about trying to put through that little piece of trail between the Hicksari and Trinidad proper so that they will make that go even further. And I know that there's plans in the works and dreams in the works to go south from Eureka to Fortuna and Garberville as well.
Yeah, it's really exciting. You know, I think that in the past few years, there's been a lot of progress on a regional trail network, and it's exciting to start seeing things come to fruition and more projects get developed and more people getting out of their cars and onto bikes and rollerblades and running and, you know, all the non-motorized goodness.
It's all that win-win-win stuff about a healthy lifestyle and attracting ecotourists and bike tourists and other, I mean, we get a lot of them already, but can you imagine being able to come to Humboldt, bring people to Humboldt who have so many options of places to go and things to do without getting in their cars?
Exactly. That's the dream. And yeah, I think we're making really good headway.
Plus, you know, I know that there are students who go to HSU and people who work at HSU who live in Eureka and Point South. Mm-hmm. So much safer for them to be able to get up to school and back without having them share the highway.
Right. Yep. So, it's very true.
Yeah, and I noticed that Caltrans is widening the off-ramp to College of the Redwoods, the other place where I teach, from the 101 going south from Eureka, so that there will be a place for bicycles there, because that's the other place where I see people on the road, and it's kind of terrifying, and they don't really have an option.
Right. Yeah. Yep. It's nice to see, you know, I think in general, it's nice to see sort of a shift in the way we think about transportation and the way we get around and, you know, creating alternative options for people should they choose to use them.
And kudos to Caltrans for changing their paradigm to include all modes of transportation. That was a big mind shift.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. And they have been absolutely integral to seeing this project come to fruition. So definitely it's important to.
So this project, this one piece of the Bay Trail, you have so many partners. Yes?
We do. We do indeed.
You know, because you've got the two cities and you've got the county. And you obviously have Caltrans involved.
Yep, absolutely. We have the California Coastal Conservancy is involved. They're one of our funders. And then, of course, you know, working with all the various regulatory agencies, I would definitely consider them partners. Everyone wants to see this project move forward. So, yeah, when you think about it, there's just quite a number of stakeholders, shall we say, that have been involved in seeing this project move forward. And it's been a really, really great experience.
That is a lot of coordination and a lot of collaboration.
Yes, I couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, that's very exciting. So from an environmental standpoint, because that's your department, what are some of the niftier accommodations or changes that you talked about using vegetable oil instead of hydraulic fuel or fluid? What else has kind of caught your fancy?
You know, I think one thing that I really admire, for lack of a better term, is we definitely, in working with the engineers, look to minimize impacts to wetlands. You know, we're right on the bay, so there's a lot of wetland impacts, and every single place we can shift the trail or narrow the trail while maintaining the transportation standards, we have been minimizing our wetland impacts. We are, at least in Gannon Slough, where there's piles that go in the slough channel, we're limited to working when the tide's low, so there's no water, no aquatic species that are present.
That must really limit construction time.
Yeah. Yes, as I said, those, you know, there's a lot of these environmental considerations that definitely impact the project cost in ways that you wouldn't necessarily think of. So yeah, working between during a 2-month window to minimize impacts to spawning aquatic species, combined with when there's no water present during the low tides, definitely limits the work window. But contractors work in magic and getting it done. We're using a vibrating pile driver as opposed to the pounding, so that minimizes sort of the hydroacoustic, the sound impacts to Aquatic species. Oh, what else can
that's,
I think
that's
of?
That's a lot of stuff, right? Just that yeah. little bit. That's pretty cool. I'm really glad yeah. that people are figuring this stuff out. When you talk about spawning aquatic species, you're talking about primarily, I assume, things like salmon?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And then, you know, we take care of the plants, so there's a lot. There are some sensitive annual plant species in salt marshes, and so we time our construction in a way that when we were going to be impacting those areas, we wait until after these annuals flower and then set their seeds, and then we collect some of the seeds so that we can plant them in another location to compensate for the habitat that we're removing by constructing the trail.
So that would be called mitigation?
Yep, you got it. And then we're on site, you know, every day monitoring for bird species, making sure if there's any nests that are found, we're staying away from the nests until all the babies fledge, leave the nest, essentially, monitoring all of that. So really, it's a holistic perspective of taking good care between timing and sort of construction methodology and materials that are used and equipment that's used to make sure that we're causing the least environmentally damaging impact that we can.
That is what I would call quite the logic puzzle.
Yeah, lots of moving parts for sure. But,
is there a website folks can go to read up on this and see what's going on with the city of Arcata?
You know, yeah, I would recommend cityofarcata.org is our main website, and we keep that very current. We have a really great public relations person in our city hall. The Facebook page is also a great resource for folks who kind of prefer Facebook to other things. We're always updating that. And then in general, I would direct people to look at the California Coastal Trail website. You know, that's not specific to the Humboldt Bay Trail, but as I said, the Humboldt Bay Trail fits within the larger puzzle of the California Coastal Trail. And so that's really interesting to check out and see the progress.
And that's californiacoastaltrail.info.
Yes. Yep. You got it.
Yeah, I'm good with the Google search.
Yes. Good thing to be good at.
Alrighty. Well, is there anything else you would like to add, Emily?
I don't think so. I think we covered all the bases. Really just exciting to see this move forward, and it'll be great when this piece is done and when the next piece gets going. So,
We are looking forward to it all, and it's a great opportunity. It will be a great opportunity to get up close and personal to the bay and see all the things that are happening and how dynamic a set of systems it really is, because you have the parts that are intertidal, and you have the mud flats, and you have the salt flats, and you have all kinds of stuff going on, and all kinds of plants and animals that require that specific set of circumstances to make it their home.
Definitely, and how lucky we are, right, to live on such a unique, within such a unique ecosystem and get access to it. You know, I think that's really the take-home message is let's enjoy this amazing resource that we have.
I have to say that in the 25 or so years that I've lived here, every single day I wake up and I thank goodness that this is where I live. This is my home. Yeah. I can't believe I still pinch myself every day.
Me too. It's good to love where you live. We're really lucky.
We are very lucky. Thank you so much, Emily, for joining us on Coastal Currents. I'll talk to you soon about progress, I hope.
Sounds great. I appreciate you taking the time.
Anytime at all. Thank you so much.
This has been a KHUM production. For more information, check out khum.com or search KHUM in iTunes.